Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I am joined today by one of my greatest friends, Ms. Nadia Cater.
Hello.
How are you, Nadia?
Fantastic, Mike. How are you?
I am fantastic. We were just talking off the air that this is episode 298.
I'm so excited to be that close to 300. It's like watching someone about to roll a 300, but then you leave right before they throw the ball, like in bowling. Yeah, and that's what's going to happen. I was not invited to the 300th episode.
Well, for that, I apologize.
You should. No, fine. I don't care. It's great.
Well, let me take this opportunity right now to say thank you for your contributions to PCMC. You've done a lot of episodes at this point, right? I mean, I don't even know offhand, going back years.
I don't know either. I feel like I'd have to go to your page and just like manually count because I can't even remember. But it's been great. Mike, you put together a great kind of like little community of nerds to talk about stuff and to share with other nerds around the globe. It's fantastic.
That's all I've ever wanted. It's all I've ever wanted, to live in a little nerd paradise of our own. I really want to normalize. I know like nerds are like normalized now, like everyone, like Hollywood is all about like making comic book movies and stuff, but I want to normalize it to a greater extent, because recently I was at a work thing and I met a work person, let's say.
Okay. So a colleague?
No, more of a mucky muck, someone way above me.
Oh.
And they were like, and they weren't from where I'm from. And they were like, hey, do you root for the New York Mets or the New York Yankees? And I was like, oh, I don't, I'm a nerd. I don't root for anything. And it's like, that's what I want to change. I want some mucky muck to be like, so who's your favorite Godzilla kaiju? Is it Hedorah? And I'd be like, as a matter of fact, it is Hedorah. What a wild guess. Could be the Hedorah t-shirt I'm wearing. I do have a Hedorah t-shirt, by the way.
That's fantastic.
Hedorah. Some people say Hedorah. I usually say Hedorah. But that's what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about the 1971 film, Godzilla versus Hedorah. Maybe my favorite Godzilla movie. And I have, as of yesterday, seen every single Godzilla movie ever made.
Oh my goodness. How many is that?
There's around 35.
Wow. And then
there's three anime movies. I finished the third anime movie yesterday. I've seen anything theatrically released. I've seen every Japanese film and I've seen every American film.
I'm so sorry. You had to watch that Matthew Broadway Godzilla movie?
I rewatched it because I was like, well, let's give this one a chance. I haven't seen it in like years and years and years. And it's still pretty bad, mostly because it doesn't want to be a Godzilla movie. It wants to be like a Jurassic Park movie.
That makes sense.
It's like he doesn't even have the atomic breath. I think the filmmaker said like, well, we want to keep it more grounded. And it's like, all right, this is a crazy concept. Like him having atomic breath would be the thing over the edge here. He's a giant monster.
Also, apparently, like, if, and mind you, I have not watched this movie in more than 10, 15 years. Wasn't it like Godzilla was a hermaphroditic creature and laid eggs? Is that what happened in that movie?
Something like that. They don't use that word. They still use masculine pronouns. And they say Godzilla, he reproduced asexually. Don't know why. Well, I know why, because they wanted a scene that was like the raptors from Jurassic Park. So they had a scene with a bunch of little Godzillas.
Which I remember that. I remember the eggs, and they were trying to blow up the eggs. You know, I didn't have the vocabulary as a child, but I do now as an adult who has a master's degree in, you know, cinema, right? But I was like, huh, I don't know what it is about this movie, but it is not good.
Yeah.
And upon reflection, mind you, I still have to watch it. It's still like, yeah, this is bad. This is really bad. Well,
you and I also went to see the second American attempt. Right?
With Bryan Cranston.
Right. And I didn't like that one. And I just rewatched it and I still don't like it.
No, and I can't even remember why. And I haven't watched this since you and I went to the theater to see it. And wow, when was that?
2014.
Oh my goodness. That was
almost 7 years ago.
Wow. Okay. Time is flying and we are getting older.
You just realized that the second.
This moment, I forgot I was not 25 anymore.
Your younger sister used to be a student of mine when I taught, and she just got married. And whenever former students of mine do very grown-up things, I always think, what are you doing? That's not possible.
Yeah, while we like watch our cartoons, we're like, what, you're having kids? Jeez. So,
you know what it was? It was like... So it was 2014, so things were still in that Batman Begins gritty reboot weird world where people thought a dark visual aesthetic equaled high profile or equaled like this is prestige. So it was very, very dark and dour looking. It also has very, very little Godzilla in it. Because, again, I think they thought it was, I don't know, classier or more sophisticated to have a Godzilla movie that doesn't show a lot of Godzilla, which is fine, but the human characters are very not compelling. Bryan Cranston's compelling, but he dies really early.
Spoiler alert. For a movie.
And then it's about his son. And his son is,
Yeah, and I remember Bryan Cranston was heavily in the advertisements. I think it's because... Oh, yeah. His career was skyrocketing because of Breaking Bad.
Right.
So now I remember he dies like, what, 20, 30 minutes into the movie, and you and I were like, what?
Yeah. And now the protagonist is his kind of boring son. Yeah, it sucks. All right, well, so before we get into this film, what is your personal history with Godzilla as a pop culture sort of totem? Have you seen any Japanese movies? Did you see it as a kid? Did you have a toy of it?
So as a kid, my familiarity was kind of like what everyone's in America's familiarity would be with Batman or Superman. Like, I might have watched something with this character, but it's so in the zeitgeist, I like know everything about it, right?
Right.
Because you can ask anyone off the street, like, what do you know about Batman? And they can give you some preliminary stuff, even if they've never seen a movie, right? Or never watched the comic.
Godzilla, it's like, what do you know about Godzilla? He's a big, giant monster who knocks down buildings and sometimes fights other monsters. And he roars a very distinctive roar. That's it. That's basically it. That's the description.
Right. So what I'm remembering as a kid, I saw that Matthew Broderick movie with my family. And there was a Godzilla animated series. That was an American series that was around the late 90s.
Tied into that movie.
Sorry?
Was that the one that was tied into that movie?
It might have been, yeah. And I think I also watched, I was looking at some tabs earlier, and I think I also watched reruns of, like, the late 70s Godzilla series. Because
the
one with Gadzuki.
I've actually seen none of that.
I gotta say, I'm honestly surprised, because I feel like Gadzuki is something that would show up at least one time in your life. It was very bizarre. So it's like Godzilla was this giant like, you know, and Godzilla's scale is always kind of different depending on what the whatever the medium is. Yeah. So,
Do you
and
know
I
what
remember,
that show's responsible for?
no, what?
The public consciousness belief that Godzilla is green, which he isn't. Godzilla is mostly black or dark gray. But we always say, what color is Godzilla? Green. And it's probably because he's green in that Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
That's probably exactly it. So yeah, so Godzilla's gigantic, and then there's Godzuki, which is like a kind of comic relief, like smaller, much smaller version of Godzilla, but also looks very different. And he was just kind of silly.
There's one of those in the movies, though, but he's not named Godzuki. His name is Manila, which was like a portmanteau of mini Godzilla.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, Hanna-Barbera cartoons are very
Did it have a laugh track? Like Scooby-Doo?
Oh my God. You know, I wish I could remember. All I remember was it was like around the time and they would play it in blocks with Johnny Quest.
Oh,
So that's,
so like their action stuff.
yeah, so I think it was more action-y. I don't remember a laugh track, but there's definitely Godzuki was a comic relief. Like he was kind of messing up or being a
Cool.
coward, you know, the usual Hanna-Barbera.
So he was like Scrappy Doo for
Oh,
Godzilla.
yeah, kind of. It kind of, and everyone hates Scrappy Doo.
Yes, everyone does hate Scrappy Doo. I don't hate him, but it
He's
is
not
weird
great.
that he can speak and Scooby can't.
Yeah, it the inconsistencies. And also, I guess Scooby has a sister. Like, I don't know. How
Yeah.
much of the Scooby family did we? I remember Scooby Dumb, but I
Yeah,
don't,
he was
it's
like
like,
his cousin.
yeah, his dumb cousin, and then his nephew, and
His cousin who doesn't solve mysteries.
who's just dumb. Yeah,
Right.
I sure. There's just a whole family of talking dogs, and just okay.
Cool.
So I guess in this, but the thing is, what was Godzuki? Was Godzuki Godzilla's child, or just of the same species? Like I. It didn't really make sense. It kind of just, the premise of the Hanna-Barbera cartoon just very basically would be like there's human characters, they're the focus, and then every episode they like call on Godzilla to come and save the day or whatever, you know, whatever problems they're having. And Godzilla would just like come out of the ocean every time.
Right.
And Godzuki just did whatever he wanted, I guess, because he's a little scaly moron.
Super
yeah, so.
formulaic, probably.
Probably what?
Super formulaic.
Oh, it was absolutely because I think they used the same animation of Godzilla coming out of the water every time.
Sure, of course.
Because it was Hanna-Barbera, everything was like on a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
I never had a Godzilla toy, but I definitely wanted one. Did you ever have one?
I think I had some from the 1998 movie, because I liked it as a kid. I have a Hedorah figure that I just got
Oh,
because,
that's
as you know, I love Hedorah.
cool. Well, which version of Hedorah is it? Because Hedorah like switches a lot in this movie.
That's right. He has or they have three forms. There's the swimming one, the walking one, and then the flying like a UFO one. I have the sort of walking Hedorah.
I like that one. The flying saucer one. It looks like a flying saucer, but when it flipped over at some point in the movie, it looked like a horseshoe crab. So
Yeah.
I was wondering if that was the basis, and it was a coincidence that it looks like a UFO. Because Hedorah also had a tadpole face, so it was like they were kind of mishmashing amphibious and aquatic kind of
Right.
stages.
But Hedorah is made out of pollution, but also comes from another planet, but is thriving on our planet because of our pollution. This is a big message movie. Big message movie. Which in some ways, despite being very different from like other Godzilla movies, it makes it a lot like the very first Godzilla movie where there's a pretty strong message it's trying to send.
Right. You know, actually, now that you mention it, I remember I didn't watch the original Gojira movie until I was in grad school. 'Cause that was like, or undergraduate. That was like an intro to film class. They always show Gojira. And that was very heavy-handed. We have to take care of the Earth, and this is our responsibility.
I love it. I think the very first one is very good.
It is. It's not what you think it would be because of, I mean, basically the comic bookization of, like, that's not a word, but yeah. Everything in Cream franchises, right? But it's not, it was never meant to be a franchise.
Well, in this film, right, this is the 11th Godzilla film made, the one we're talking about today. And he is securely in his I'm a superhero role. He's the good guy. The little kid in the movie looks up to him. Was that surprising to you?
You know, I have to say no, simply because Godzilla kind of alternates. And like, and I know you have way more experience with Godzilla than I do because of all you've seen. But if you compared, like, the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, he was the good guy.
Sure, yeah.
Even in the original Gojira movie, he wasn't necessarily the bad guy because the human beings were responsible.
Right.
So
it's that's right.
interesting. So yeah. I wasn't really surprised so much as, like, also how the Japanese handled Godzilla is very interesting because I was just talking about this earlier. My partner is like comparing, so like in American movies, generally speaking, right? It's like there's always a villain, and it's always very clear that this villain is like the main problem and that it's all within themselves. Yeah. But when you're looking at these Godzilla movies, just the two that I'm comparing, it's like Godzilla isn't necessarily the villain. It's more like we have to take responsible for this problem that human beings cause. Whereas like in American movies, it's never really like that. It's just there's a bad guy that showed up and we have to go defeat it.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, what's interesting about that is that when you look at the first Godzilla is 1954, so it's so close to the war, it's so close to the bombing that it's almost like a wound that's only like half healed that mm-hmm. you're ripping open again. You know what I mean? Like anyone in the production, anyone watching it when it first came out, you have firsthand experience with the war and with the bombings.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I feel like that pain and dealing with that pain is all over that first movie.
But you also notice though that when you watch that movie, there's almost no indication that there's the nuclear, you know, bomb and waste and stuff, but there's never any indication of who did it.
No.
There's nothing. It's like you can jump in and watch that movie and not even realize, if you have no understanding of, you know, that kind of history of World War II, that Americans were responsible. And I think that was such an interesting take.
And in the film, no one says this is the Americans' fault. You know,
it's more about we have to work together to solve a problem that human beings cause.
They don't even directly speak about the bombings during the war. The Nagasaki Hiroshima bombings, they talk about nuclear testing. So they're not talking about it yet. Of course, it's entirely about it. To me, the most heartbreaking scene in the original film is there's a scene where like there's a fallout shelter and there's all these people there and they look kind of like refugees. They've had to be like leave their homes and they're all like disheveled and you see a bunch of cute little kids. And then there's a doctor with like a Geiger counter or whatever detects radiation. And you see that it's like crazy. So you know that these little kids who are like cute little kids, like they are severely poisoned. And it's so dark. By the way, that Godzilla being radioactive, as the series went on, they really dropped that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really in this one. He shows up. He saves the fucking day. All right, you know, so yeah, sorry.
Sorry, I was just, you know, the thing that was kind of funny about that is that Godzilla exists in this world, and there's really no kind of, like, helping the audience understand that. It's really, from the very beginning, everyone knows Godzilla exists, and he's just a part of Japan.
Right, the little kid is playing with Godzilla toys. And these were, like, real Godzilla toys that were out in the market. And he's like having a great time. He lives in a world where Godzilla, the real Godzilla, exists, not Godzilla movies. Yet he plays with the toys and he loves them, and his uncle's like, "Oh, you love Godzilla, right?" And he's like, "Yeah, Godzilla's the best." I mean, there's a line early on where the uncle says, "Is Godzilla your favorite?" And the kid says, "Yeah, he's a Superman."
Right.
And at this point, by the way, in this sort of stretch of the movies, there would often be a child character because kids were such a big part of the audience. They started aiming the movie at kids.
That's interesting.
Like this little kid, he like figures things out for his scientist father. He's like on the ball. He's making the plot happen.
He also is psychically connected to Godzilla at least two or three times in this movie.
Yeah, it's not totally explained why, but a little bit he is. Godzilla, well, Godzilla's like Jesus. He's a friend to the children.
He has risen from the ocean too. Oh man.
All right, so a little some facts about this movie. This movie is the 11th Godzilla movie ever made. It's from 1971. It's part of the Showa era, which is the first era of Godzilla movies. The first 15 movies. It has a big environmental theme. The bad guy does have alien origins, but is basically a pollution sludge monster who eats smog and gets more powerful with imbibing pollution. This movie was directed by Yoshimitsu Banno, who only directed one Godzilla movie. He was the producers had wanted something kind of different, you know, and so they were like, let's hire this guy. He's new. He's kind of a hippie, which you could totally see in the film itself. It's very psychedelic. It has a lot
Oh, no.
of hippie imagery. And he makes this movie, which a lot of Godzilla fans don't like, but I love because I always love something that stands out from the norm. So, you know, I love the sore thumb. And this movie, comparing it to the Godzilla movies before and after it, it's so odd and it's how different it is. And that's why I find it so fascinating. And after he made the movie, the producer said, okay, you can never make a Godzilla movie again. But here's the crazy thing. This guy's responsible for the American Godzilla movies we have now. Because at some point when Godzilla got really his popularity waned, he was able to like get the rights from Toho to do a Godzilla movie. And he wanted to like do a little Godzilla IMAX movie. And he shopped that around all over and then shopped it around in America. And then it kind of went through the production cycle, and America was like, well, we want to make a whole movie. And basically, that Bryan Cranston movie, the director of this movie, Yoshimitsu Banno, is an executive producer. So, this guy who was like the shunned director of the original Godzilla movies, the guy that was like, oh, you can never have anything to do with Godzilla, he is the executive producer on this, you know, his work at least helped lead to this American series, which has been very popular.
Oh wow, that is interesting.
So he's redeemed.
I wonder how well American Godzilla movies do in Japan.
I'm not sure. That's a great question.
Not that I expected you to answer, but I was just like, I wonder if they watch this and like, what are Americans doing?
Well, I know the 98 one, the plan had been like, oh, let the Americans, they were like, listen, we make a lot of money off the Godzilla toys. So why don't we let someone else make a movie and we'll make toys and then we'll make money and then we'll rest and then we'll come back. We'll always come back to Godzilla. So their plan was to have a 10-year break in Japan and to let, because America, it was TriStar who made the 98 one. It was supposed to be a trilogy. But the first one was so bad that the Japanese public and the original producers hated it and were like, okay. So then they came back making a new Godzilla movie, like only a few years later, because it sort of screwed up their whole plan.
Oh, geez.
So this movie begins with like images of smokestacks and like this dark, disgusting smoke coming out of these stacks. And Hedorah, a real by real I mean like practical, like Hedorah coming out of a swamp, like his big head, and he has vagina eyes. And I don't know why. Men are afraid of vaginas, But they even said like they made the eyes they tried to make the eyes look like vaginas, just because the way that they're sort of vertical, stretched vertically. And I find it when he's in the water like that, and you could tell it's practical and it's just his weird eyes coming out of it, I find that very unnerving.
Especially since they glow too. They're just
Yeah.
these glowing red vagina eyes just coming at you. They're also so big, so you're like imagining the scale of the creature, right? Ugh.
So I have two things.
Okay.
I have thalassophobia, which is fear of deep, dark bodies of water. And I also have submechanophobia, fear of man-made objects submerged in water, especially machines in water.
Oh, interesting.
So, like I just rewatched Jaws because they played at the Alamo, so I saw it at a cool movie party. And I was saying, like, you know, like there's like two shots where there's a real shark. And that's not scary. Like the Jaws shark is scarier to me because my brain can detect that it's a machine. That makes sense. Not, and if it were a machine, like if it were a movie about a robot shark, I'd be like, this is stupid. But it works on this uncanny level where it's supposed to be a shark, but there's just something off about it, and it freaks me out.
So Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what Hedorah makes me feel like in this movie.
I don't have those phobias, but the kind of hard to see through the sludge kind of freaked me out a little bit. Just, it looks very viscous and like you can get sucked in and not come out
He
like a
looks like
swamp.
tar.
Yeah.
He looks like tar.
It was really disgusting.
And there are some scenes where he's kind of like the blob, where like this black tar slime will like ooze into a place.
I was wondering about that because you do you remember that was it Tales from the Crypt movie? One of those like anthology horror from the 80s that Stephen King was attached to,
Oh,
where
well, not Tales from the Crypt, Creepshow.
Creepshow. There you go. Okay, yeah. So
Yeah.
you remember that with the sludge kind of monster
On
thing
the
that was,
raft.
yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering if they took anything from this movie because it
Wow.
looked kind of similar. I mean, I'll
Yeah.
say I think they did it a little better, but it was a more than a decade difference. Of course, the technology
Right.
is going to change. Yeah, but it made me think about that, especially since it seems like the sludge has like a poisonous or acidic effect on human beings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so kind of like, so I feel like the blob more like devours you, whereas this seems to like burn you and turn you. And at some point, I think some guy turned into a skeleton at one
Yes.
point in the movie.
Like if there's also a very weirdly depressing part where there's a guy like working on, I guess he's a like a construction worker or whatever. He's like working on a building that's not completed yet. So it's just the steel, you know, bones of it. I don't know anything about
Right.
construction, but
Sure.
it's like you know, it's all steel framework. It's not a and Hedorah in its flying mode is coming at him, and he jumps to his death, which is to me more depressing than the monster killing you. You basically out of fear committing suicide. But on his way down, he becomes bones, and then we see his bones on the ground.
What does that mean that like technically then Hedorah killed him?
Technically, but he made the last moments of his life even more horrible than they would have been.
That's a solid point. Yeah, so we're talking about Hedorah's forms, and the first part of the movie was pretty interesting because it shows you all this sludge, and there's even when the movie starts the credits, there's this psychedelic kind of
Yeah.
lounge singer singing about pollution and how there's no more human being. And that's like the theme song of
Yeah.
the movie,
It's
which is
so
really
the
depressing.
director wrote the lyrics.
That makes sense.
It's for the song is called Give Back the Sun. And it's so on the fucking nose. And actually the girl who's singing it is Kiko Mari, And she's in the movie later on. She plays the girlfriend of the uncle.
Yeah.
She's looking directly at, it's so different from other Godzilla styles, because she's got like this lava lamp background behind her, and she's singing this hippie song, and she's also like directly addressing us. She's looking right down the barrel into the camera. And then the movie, it's like intercut with like a swamp, footage of like a disgusting swamp. And then the last thing you see is like a clock in, again, so heavy-handed, a clock, like an old, like kind of a cuckoo clock, not a cuckoo, like a wall clock.
Yeah.
In this like pollution sludge, and you hear it chime, like time is up for us. And then it does a really cool thing, which is it cuts to like these beautiful yellow flowers. And that's when you see the little kid playing in the garden with his Godzilla toys. I think this movie's beautiful. It's odd for sure, and it's surreal, but I think it's beautiful. It also does what I think is the smartest thing, which is it makes all of its fights at night. And Godzilla fights almost always look better at night.
That's a good point. What I found interesting was, like, so they're in Japan. So Japan is like a series of islands, right? So you can't really escape the water. The water is completely polluted. There's human garbage in it. There's that clock. There's also, like, when they go underwater a little later, there's like calcified birds.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty bizarre. So it's very toxic, and it really makes you think about, like, cutting from that to that little kid playing in a beautiful garden. If you also notice, the garden is actually a bunch of potted plants. So they're not even in the ground.
Right.
And it's just like a wall. And I don't know if that was like intentional, or that was just how the budget worked out and they just didn't have a garden ready, but it was just a bunch of potted plants, almost like for sale at a store.
Yeah.
And they're just very bright, and it's just such a big contrast between the brown sludge, which later it does get addressed. So it really makes you like think about who could be affected by that because of how close it is to that little kid.
Right. And fish is such a huge part of the Japanese economy, right? And like this fisherman, who I guess is like a neighbor to the central family, like the central family is this professor scientist named Dr. Yano, his wife Toshi, her younger brother Yokio, and then his young son Ken. And this like fisherman is like, I found this weird tar tadpole thing, and it's this weird monstrous thing that doesn't exist. And he's like, what is it? And the scientist like examines it, and he's like, this is not something that is natural of Earth. But fish becomes a big theme. Like later on, in one of the more bizarre moments, the Yokio, who I just called him the brother-in-law. He's the brother-in-law of the scientist, but he's also the uncle to the little kid. And so I usually think of him as the uncle. He's like in this bar, this like club that appears a bunch of times, and everyone all of a sudden has fish heads.
That was so weird.
But then it cuts and they don't. So it's clearly a vision, but it's weird as fuck.
And it's never addressed either.
No. There's a couple of really surreal moments. The other really, really surreal one, which I love, is at the end, these kids, to like, I don't know what they think they're going to accomplish, they decide to have a like party at the base of Mount Fuji to like, I don't know what, save the environment or whatever. And they cut, there's all these like kids like hanging out and listening to music and dancing. And then they cut to, in like a field, a bunch of like gray old people that look like ghosts. They look like specters, just blank face staring at the kids. And it's like, are you actual ghosts? Are you just representation of the last generation? It's just, it's so weird because it just comes out of nowhere. And you're like, who the fuck is that? This group of like weird old people.
Yeah, that was so bizarre. And then they never really address it. So you're like,
no, it's not explained who these people are.
I think it could be more, I mean, not a metaphor necessarily, but just a comment on just like, because you see that too. It's like, What I've noticed throughout this movie is there is a lot of joy in it, and you're like, there's so many instances of people like enjoying themselves and having fun and being together, but then also there's like constant monster attacks. Because there wasn't that sense of urgency that I feel like I've seen in other Godzilla movies, where it's like a state of emergency and people are, things are shutting down and people are going into like hiding. No, it's like beach party, bonfire, or like little kid playing outside, or he goes to an amusement park with his parents. I'm like, are you guys worried about this concerning pollution monster? But then they're like having a ball, and it just, I don't, I think it is meant that to really just enjoy the little things in life while horrible things happen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but that is a recurring theme.
No, you're right. It's as heavy-handed as it is, and how much, like, you know, it's got three times they sing this song, Give Back the Sun, that's like, the world is dead. It's actually, I think, very playful. It's a playful movie. It's self-reflexive. It thinks of itself as a movie, as a Godzilla movie. I mean, there are animated interstitials that really don't connect to anything. It's just, there's three, I think, little animated sequences of, like, an animated Ghidorah, like, drink, he, like, picks up a ship and then, like, drinks oil from it like it's a beer can. And it's, like, it's just, like, what is it there for? It's just experimental. It's just fun.
It was, yeah, because at first, the first time they showed it, I think it was, like, right after one of the newscasts or something like that.
Yeah.
So I thought it was one of those things where, what, I don't, and it's been so long since I watched a newscast, so I don't know if they still do this, but what they used to do is do like reenactments or something.
Yeah.
And I was, at first I thought it was a part of that, but then it happened again without the newscast.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so this isn't part of the film's world. It's just kind of something put in for the audience.
Right. It's extra textual.
Yeah. There was pretty good animation though, for especially, I love that kind of 70s stuff.
Yeah, The young son Ken, well, the father, they go to check it out, and the father goes underwater and he's attacked by Ghidorah, and he's like, he's got like scars on his face for the rest of the movie. He's like sick for the rest of the movie, like laying down in bed, and like half of his face looks all black and scarred from the attack. But then the little kid names him Ghidorah, which I think, oh, they say what it is. It's like, because it comes from Ghidorah, which is a kind of polluted sludge.
Yes. And then they use that as the name for the rest of the movie. And later on, the father scientist discovers some kind of mineral that Ghidorah is made out of and calls it Ghidorium or something like that.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, oh, they just took this as canon and just moved with it. So you're right. The kid has so much agency in this movie.
It's, yeah, yeah. That was a big thing for them at that time, you know, because kids liked Godzilla. It's interesting because you can, Godzilla changes in as many different things, kind of like the way Batman's many different things, but you could always see him as reflecting something in the culture.
Yeah.
Right? Like an economy that's doing better, a world that is healing from the war, you know, things like that, you know, I think show up in that Showa era, like superhero Godzilla.
Right.
Godzilla's first appearance in this movie is really cool. He's like, you see him coming over this like orange sunset, and like he's completely tinted orange. And instead of using like some of the more traditional Godzilla themes, Godzilla's always introduced in this movie with this sort of goofy, jazzy horn, like wah, wah, wah.
I was trying to figure out if that was supposed to be funny or not. I could not tell.
It's playful. I don't know if it's making fun of him, but it's kind of like, here's our guy, Godzilla.
Well, I didn't mean like making fun of him, but I was wondering if that was, because it almost seemed like comic relief, but it wasn't funny. That's, and I'm wondering if there's just something we're missing because we did not grow up in Japan in the 60s and 70s. There was just something very strange about it.
Right. But I do think Godzilla, he acts heroically. You know, like, he does fly in this movie, which is the only time he's ever flown in the history of Godzilla movies. And he flies in this weird way where he shoots his at- he like curls himself up and shoots his atomic breath and uses that to propel him.
I laughed so hard when I saw because he's propelling backwards across the land.
Yeah.
Was this faster for him?
Right.
What was this choice?
Yeah. That he only does here and nowhere else ever.
So, on a side note, I was just thinking about how earlier you said that Godzilla, like, movies kind of move away from the atomic history after a bit, right? So, my question is, what do they call his breath then? Because isn't it called atomic breath?
Yeah, they usually always call it atomic breath.
If they refer
to it, yeah. But, I mean, in the very first movie, it looks like steam, and it, like, melts things. And it's very clearly, like, a kind of hot radiation.
Right. Whereas
by this point, it's like a laser coming out of his mouth.
Like, sure, what?
You know, but there's a heroic thing that happens. I don't know if it really happens because it happens in the boy's dream. So it could be just the boy's fantasy, although the boy is connected to him. Godzilla sees a bunch of pollution in the ocean and he gets mad and he uses the atomic breath to burn which I don't know if that's better for the environment, but he gets mad and he burns all the pollution. And the kid dreams this. In a very, again, a very surreal, like, because you see, like, the kid's head on a pillow, and that's juxtaposed with the image of Godzilla, like, roaring, and, you know, Godzilla's mad. Godzilla's down with the cause in this movie. He's mad about pollution.
Right.
I tell you who is parodic. The way they represent the military, I think, is very much like they're a joke. And I think that is really cool for a Godzilla movie. Because the military is in almost every movie. And sometimes they're effectual, sometimes they're ineffectual. But in this movie, I feel like they're really depicted as stupid and goofy.
I would say, also, it's only one scene. But I remember the first time they show Hedorah on the smokestacks just sucking up all that smog.
Yeah.
And someone calls the police station and it's just like a close up of a policeman's head. And he picks up the phone. And he's like, what? Of course not. Hedorah is a sea monster. Like, that's the absurd thing. Not,
right. Not well,
like, not that the monster exists, but like, obviously I know, like, Hedorah is a sea monster. Why would he be sucking up smoke? And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Everyone's.
That's the funny thing about the Showa era movies, which is it's this weird world where we accept that there are just monsters and it's cool. Like, we still go on with our lives and it's not a big deal.
I like that. I think it's refreshing because I feel like, and of course I'm generalizing, but so many American movies, there's always this like uphill battle of like not the authority not believing or not understanding. And then you have to like show people. But in this movie, it's just immediately accepted all the time. Godzilla's gonna be angry about about pollution. Oh, okay. Hedorah exists. Yeah, there's nothing in it that suggests that anyone thinks otherwise. It's just a widely accepted fact. Right. Sky is blue, green grass.
Right. Godzilla's like he's omnipresent. Like, he lives in the ocean, and he just knows to come out to help us, and then he goes back to the ocean. You know what I mean? Like, there's no origin of where he comes from. Like, they expect you, the audience, to have every idea of who Godzilla is,
which I also find fascinating, because how many superhero movies did we get, Mike, like growing up, where we had a reiteration of the origin story over and over and over and over again?
Right. That's one of the reasons I think the Michael Keaton Batman's so interesting, because he's just Batman from the jump. He just is Batman. And the most recent one too, the Robert Pattinson one, does that as well, which is like, yeah, I never in my life need to see Batman or Superman's origin ever again. Ever.
We've seen it so many times.
Million times.
That's always been my kind of annoyance. It's like, you can have 1 minute of just Superman changing into, you know, changing clothes, becoming Clark Kent. And that's it. We don't need to know about Jor-El. We do not need to see the baby. Mm-hmm. In the spaceship,
right?
In the Kansas farm, like, who? We all know. We know. We get it. And the Japanese are like, we don't have time for this. Everyone knows who Godzilla is. We're just gonna go. We're gonna spit out 30 movies.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of There was a run there in the Showa era where it was like one a year. Boom, 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 boom. They just keep going, keep going, keep going.
So like, so basically like what we get from Marvel movies today.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Wow. that sounds exhausting, I'll be honest. It's interesting though that there's a context for that.
Right.
Just what we have now.
But Marvel's obsessed with continuity, whereas Godzilla, its continuity it's there, but it's not regarded with any, like, they're not careful about not breaking it. They break it all the time. You know, they just would make whatever movie they wanted to make.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
There's a rom-com starring Godzilla and, like, another monster. I'm there.
Well, one of the other ones that a lot of people don't like that I really like is called All Monsters Attack, which is a very weird one where it's another little kid protagonist. And the only time you see Godzilla and other monsters are in his imagination. So really, the story of the movie is just about a little kid who has a bully at school. And then, like, these bank robbers kidnap him. But then, like, he, like, home alone runs away because his visions of Godzilla and Manila have given him confidence. It's a weird one.
That's funny. the confidence in you.
Yeah. There's a couple of cool things that this movie does also, where the scientist's father will be describing something to the son, like explaining something, and there'll be voiceover, and you'll see like almost like a slideshow explaining what he's talking about. And then there'll even be like text on the screen, as if it's like a little class in the middle of this movie. Like, he does it when he's explaining like how pollution works. And he does it when he explains later on, like, what a nebula is.
Yeah, that was weird.
Nebula.
That was
teaching us things.
I was like, wow, we're learning.
So what did you think of that hippie club? We see it a few times. It seems wild.
It's so weird and fun. I also love that the dancer, singer, was wearing, when you finally see her whole, like, so in the first part, she's wearing like a dress, right? This elegant kind of like orange dress. But yeah, then later in the club, she's wearing a bodysuit that just has prints of like the ocean on it.
Yeah.
And she's singing that theme song about pollution and stuff. Right. And it's like, it's so present. And I think it really goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier, was just that joy. It's like the joy while the world is outside crumbling. And it's so fascinating.
There's a cool thing where she's singing and you see, like, she's got this big screen behind her that's showing images, but sometimes the film itself just cuts those images. You see like blood drip down, and then you see like skeletons dancing, like silhouettes of dancing skeletons. So it's like super dark, but also playful.
Yeah, that was weird. And then there was a band. And then, like, at first you're like, what am I seeing? But then, like, the band comes out and, like, or it cuts back a little bit. And it's the screen in front of the band, like, behind the band. So it's like people are watching the band play and listening to music and dancing and also seeing these skeletons kind of going all out.
Right.
It's very odd.
Godzilla shows up and fights Hedorah. They fight, I think, two or three times in this movie. And Godzilla, like, punches all the way through him. It's kind of weird. And I think Godzilla, like, burns his hand or something.
Yeah, so he's, like, toxic all the way in. They make a note for some reason in the movie, one of the scientists, where they discover that Hedorah doesn't feel pain. So, like, I guess he doesn't have a nervous system, or they don't have whatever pronoun Hedorah has. Like, Hedorah does not have a nervous system. So I guess it's like Godzilla's beating the crap out of Hedorah, but Hedorah doesn't feel it. It's just like a distraction.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. But yeah, there's a lot of fight scenes in this. I kind of like how the movie is pretty, like, the pacing is great. We don't get, there's not too much of anything.
Yeah, it's pretty brisk. I think it's like 90 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. And it feels that way. It doesn't drag.
And you know, they would actually sometimes they would do like Saturday morning serials for little kids in theaters, and they would actually cut more of the people out. So like they would make like versions of these movies where it's basically just monster fights. No, it was a really surreal scene that I loved. Do you remember the scene with the guys who were like playing some kind of domino game or card game? They're like,
oh, inside. Like Mahjong, yeah, or something like that. And they were like,
yeah, Mahjong, yeah.
I think it was Mahjong. I'm not entirely sure, but they looked like dominoes, and they were like playing it. But then like Hedorah like flings sludge, and it just flies across and goes through their window, and it just kind of like turns them. It just kills them. Like they don't turn into skeletons, but they kind of just die on impact.
Right. It cuts to them. And, like, the whole room is sludge, and, like, their body parts are just, like, sticking out in weird ways. It reminded me of the last image in Un Chant Andalou. Right?
Yeah.
Where they're, like, on the beach, and, like, the girl's, like, arms are, like, coming out of the sand.
Yeah, that was so...
super surreal. Super surreal.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't... It's a little inconsistent with what we've seen.
Yes. Yeah, there's not a consistency. Like, how he affects you, sometimes he like, burns you completely up. Sometimes he just, like, takes your breath away. Like, the Ken's mother is, like, a gym teacher, and we see, like, she's, like, doing a class outside with these students, and then Hedorah, like, flies over, and they all, like, lose their breath and, like, pass out. Why didn't they die?
Yeah, why didn't they die? But also, why didn't the teacher pass? Like, she seemed completely confused on why the entire class fell over.
Right. Your son named this monster.
Yeah, get on the ball.
What do you think of Hedorah's, like, voice? He makes, like, a dolphin-esque, weird, squeaky noise.
I don't know. I just felt it was odd. It was just odd. I feel like a lot of this movie can be boiled down to, this is an odd choice. I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's just I don't understand it. And yeah. I'm enjoying it. But it just kind of happened. Because, so he has those three forms. One of them looks like a hermit crab. He starts off as a tadpole. But then he also makes like a dolphin noise. It's like, it's all very inconsistent. I'm not saying that this movie has to make sense.
Right.
It absolutely does not, but I just wasn't sure what. And then also, when they said that it could be came from outer space, so why would it sound anything like some stuff on Earth?
Right.
I don't know. I kind of didn't even think about it. Like, it didn't even register to me. I was just like, this is just odd, but I'm going to keep watching. What did you think of it?
It's unnerving. It stands out compared to other Godzilla foes. Usually they all kind of just roar. The fact that he makes this like dolphin sound, it's weird because he comes out of like the water, and then there's like the weird fish tadpole that we're introduced to. So like he's a lot of things at once. Like we're told he's from an alien world that landed here and thrived on our pollution. And we're told he's pollution, but he's also like a sea creature.
Yeah.
And he sounds like a sea creature.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, well, what does that mean? Like, does that mean that...
I guess, yeah. I mean, you like you said before, like, Japan is islands, you know what I mean? So, like, I guess the water as something that can kill you is a very scary idea. Something dangerous from the water. Which, of course, Godzilla was, but isn't at this point when this movie's made.
No, he has on toys. People love him.
What did you think of that scene where there's, like, a montage of news reporters talking about Hedorah, and you see, like, a bunch of different TV screens? But then, like, screen has, like, a baby crying on it, and then they're, like, skeletons. It gets super, it's super montage-y.
And then it gets all, then they all change into colors, and it's just... Yeah. This is so odd, and I keep using that word, but it's just so hard else to describe. I'm like, I haven't quite seen something like this before, and it's visually interesting, but what does it mean that people are in a panic, or that it's dominating the news cycle, or yeah. What?
So the way that they defeat Hedorah is they the professor finds out that, like, from that little fish that he has, like, if you electrocute it, it turns to, like, powder. And so he's like, okay, we'll build two giant electrical walls, and we will, like, trick Hedorah into walking in between them, and then we'll electrocute him. But they can't get it right, and, like, that's, they're showing the how ineffectual the government is. They're like, they can't get the walls to work. So then Godzilla shows up, and I don't know the science of this, why this works, but he blows his atomic breath on the walls, which make them work, and then it fucking fries him. And you think he's dead. He, like, rips his eyes out, and he's holding his eyes. Although his eyes are red in every other scene, and in that scene they're white, so a lot of people are like, what is Godzilla holding? These two white orbs? But then, like, you think it's over, then, like, Hedorah, like, flies away, like, a little Hedorah inside him comes out, and that's when Godzilla flies after him. And also, when Godzilla's flying, there's this very funny, like, military, bum 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 bum, like, military theme.
And, you know, he's flying so slow, too, and I think that's what made it really funny. It's just, like, it's just moving so slowly. Yeah. And yet he's catching up with Hedorah. Yeah, so now that you mention it, if the eyes were red the entire time, there's even a point where a laser comes out of Hedorah's eye, which is also red. So the red laser have red eyeball.
Yeah, yeah.
And Godzilla. So what were the white orbs? Was it, like, when Hedorah's dead, like, it's not red anymore?
I mean, but the lore around it is that they ran out of money, so they didn't paint them red.
That makes the most sense.
They were running out of money.
Yeah. This movie looks like it was running out of money every other day.
Yeah.
I was like, what if they were like Hedorah's testicles? I don't know. And I was just like,
I mean, that's definitely a theory. It's interesting how, like, Godzilla himself, the way he moves in this movie is, like, so weird. Like, and then, like, at the end, he's literally, like, ripping Hedorah apart. Like, he's so involved. He's not just, like, heroic Godzilla. He's, like, very human in this. Like, he even, like, at the end of the movie, like, he looks like he nods goodbye to the little kid. Well, the uncle dies unceremoniously. The uncle, Hedorah kills the uncle, and it's like, who gives a shit? And then it's just Ken, the little kid, now hanging out with his uncle's girlfriend, the singer. And Godzilla, like, looks like he nods his head to them, like, goodbye. I must go back to the sea.
You know what's funny, though, is, like, I was watching that ending, and it's like, I just kept waiting for Godzilla to get to the ocean, and he, like, never does. It just keeps slowly walking away, and you're like, how long is this? And he just
it's like the end of Shane.
It is.
It's just like he's this hero going back to the horizon.
Oh, you know, when you mentioned, like, how human Godzilla is, wasn't it just odd that it seemed like almost like the way he walks was, like, kind of jaunty, like he was almost dancing a lot?
Yes, and he's doing a lot of weird things with his arms in this movie, too.
That, too. It almost looks like he's doing sign language or something.
Yeah.
Because he keeps, like, moving his arm on his cheek, like, rubbing it and going down. And I was like, that looks like sign language.
Right.
But
yeah.
But American Sign Language, and this is Japan, so Japanese Sign Language is going to look completely different. But that was just so weird, because he does it multiple times in the movie.
Yeah.
You're just like, why is this happening? But then it also looks like he's kind of egging Hedorah on, almost like a wrestling match. And at one point, they're actually wrestling. Like, it's wrestling
moves. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's weird.
I was like, okay.
So all in all, what do you think of this movie? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. It gave me a lot to think about in terms of thematically and just, like, how to approach a Godzilla movie. Because, like you said, it's so completely different from anything else I've watched with Godzilla in it. So there's something, I enjoyed it, and I guess I would recommend it if people are interested in kaiju movies. But that's, again, a lot of stuff you and I watch, Mike, is very weird. So it's like, there's only so many people we can suggest things to.
Right.
Well, what about you? What did you think of it?
It's one of my favorite. It's definitely, like, my top three Godzilla movies of the Japanese ones, or top four. I really love, I mean, I love the original because it's actually a good movie. Not that this isn't actually a good movie, but it's silly. I love this one. I love the one with the little kid. And I love a later one called, they call it GMK, Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah. And it's a very weird kind of reboot where it's magic instead of sci-fi. It's, and a lot of people hate it. See, that's the thing. I like the outliers. In most series, I like the outliers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nadia, I hope you get to see more Godzilla movies.
I mean, you've inspired me. I might start a project. Let's see how far I can go.
Thank you for being here, Nadia Kader. We come out every Wednesday. Next week is $2.99.
Exciting.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.